Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. And you never know, maybe a Twisted Mister or two. Hope everyone's having a great week so far, and I hope you have a better week to follow. Hey, girls, how's it going?
Good.
Very
Hi,
good.
Naomi. Hi, Jean.
Hi, Naomi.
Hi.
Kim.
Hi. Hi, both of you.
How goes it?
Oh, okay. Had a long, long nap this afternoon, so a lovely siesta, as Pam would say.
I'm totally jealous. I am totally jealous. I did not have a nap today. So you hear me snoring, just kick me under the table. I'll be back. You know.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. So what a day. Mm-hmm. Pam, what's new with you?
Oh, not much. I don't know. Same old, same old. I too took a nap today, but I also took a walk and you know, did some cooking and cleaning. So, you know, life was balanced today, and that's always a good thing.
Balance is a wonderful thing. Because God help you, if I'm not balanced, then I'm off the walls.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah, I do. I get crazy when I get out of balance. So let's just be honest, you know. And some people would tell you I'm out of balance every day because I'm constantly a meanie, you know. I know I'm not quite that big, but I can be. I admit it. So anyway,
well, I get it. I'm the same way. I need to feel like life is in balance and I've got all my ducks in a row. Unfortunately, that does not always, very rarely does that actually happen for me. So,
well,
yep,
I get my ducks in a row and then they all wander off together. So it's never, yeah, you know, really, you know, yeah. When I get my stuff together, I always forget where I put it. You know, it's a constant, like, puzzle. But with that being said, interesting prompts for tonight, I got to say. I found them and I was kind of intrigued by the images. I saw that there was, it's put out by a fashion thing. It's, I forget how they worded it, but I thought it was unique. Let's see. It's here somewhere. Mythos, fashion for legendary creatures with Midjourney. I'm not 100% sure. I know it's AI, which, you know, it doesn't matter to me, right? You know, whatever works. But I found them to be intriguing. You know, we've all done mythology, you know, here and mythology there, and, you know, things like, you know, different characters out of mythology. But I thought this was just unique in the way that it appeared. So that was what prompted.
Oh, they were beautiful.
Yeah, some of them were really, really cool. And other ones I was like, huh? I have to admit it was a Yeti. And I'm like, the Yeti? I don't think that the Yeti, I don't ever remember that being part of mythology. And I said, I have to sweep that one off to the side there because I couldn't justify it in my brain. I just couldn't do it, you know. It doesn't take much for me to, you know, get a little confused. I thought they were really different, and I thought, well, you know, it might spark some people to, you know, write something a little bit, you know, a little bit different. You know, you may have one or two mermaid rights out there in your archive, but you look at this image and it may pull something different from you. So I always thought, well, you know, let's just give it a whirl. Anyway, that's all I'm going to say about it. I thought they were neat images. And I did put the link on there so everyone could kind of follow the path. You know, the artist was kind of, it was a little bit misleading because I was trying. This is Rui Vega. And then it says credit at La Soul Art. And then I followed that and I wasn't going very far. And I was like, you know what, I'm just putting the whole thing up there. Let people just see exactly what I saw. Because I thought it was intriguing, you know. I wanted to make sure that everyone could find the work. I said there was more coming soon, but I don't know when the heck I'm supposed to wait, but I said, nah, not this week. Not this week, I'm not. Anyway, enough about me. Anyway, ladies, I don't know. I guess we should kind of get started. What do you think? Maybe? Yeah, I think.
Absolutely. Hey, Jean.
Yes.
Just to let you know that Lawrence has joined us. So welcome, Lawrence. Glad you could join us.
Hello, Lawrence.
Hi,
thank
Lola.
You very much.
Welcome aboard.
Full smile, Naomi. I'm here tonight representing the Yeti Anti-Defamation League.
You do that.
just a little note to remind you that even though the Yeti is not, you know, one of the European mythological creatures.
Yep.
There are vast areas in the world and hundreds of millions of people feel the Yeti is every bit as real a mythological creature as a Minotaur or a Phoenix or anything else that you care to mention. So don't sweep the Yeti off to the side because he will come seeking you.
I did because I felt that the Yeti was just a little bit new wave compared to the rest of these images. You know what I mean? Anubis has been around way longer than the Yeti, I do believe.
I would tend to disagree with you, but all right, whatever.
You know, we can agree to disagree then, I think. Well, I'll arm wrestle you for
it. I'm in no mood to agree to disagree.
I will wrestle you later over who's going to win that one. Kay? Okay. Just say Kay. All right. I won't hurt you.
Anyway. That's the Yeti growl.
That is very specifically called a Bronx steer.
Okie doke. Well, that is the way that goes. You know what, Pam? I'm going to ask you to start us off tonight. And this is a piece called Coil by Garanway. So, here goes, and whenever you're ready.
A temptation of Medusa with a beckoning of snakes and a hissing calling. Let us eat with our embrace. Enjoy the poison of our bite burning in your veins. Feel the face of fantasy laughing in your brain. With closed eyes of lust, enjoy our arms around you to merge into a snakeskin world of sin found in scales of passion. Tasting a forked tongue in a kiss of the moment's final sleep. End poem.
Nice read, Pam. Naomi, do you want to start us off?
Yeah. This was had a great flow, and what a wonderful read that was, Pam. You know, there's a great flow, and you know, it illustrates well, you know, the Medusa and, you know, the way she lured people in, just, and then, you know, just it wasn't it Medusa that if you looked at her, the people turned to stone. Was that her? I didn't do my research. Sorry, before the show I should have, but I napped too long. Oh my gracious. And and you know, the way that you know, they with closed eyes of lust enjoy our arms around you to merge into a snakeskin world of sin. I love that, you know, because you know, she had all these snakes coming out of her head, and so to merge into a snakeskin world of sin, that was a neat line. And yeah, overall, you know, just a wonderful written piece, wonderful brevity that flows perfectly, and you know, says so much. So, well done, Garanway.
Nice comment, Naomi. And Lorana, how about you?
Well, there's a couple of things that are whirling around in my brain. A temptation of Medusa with a beckoning of snakes, hissing, calling us, let us eat with our embrace. What he's done is given voice to the snakes that she has on her hair, like hair. So it's not her voice, but it's the voice of the snakes, which I think is a really novel way of approaching the subject. And the title Coil is wonderfully placed. The snakes have often been used as kind of a phallic symbol because of their shape. And that is also something that I think he uses quite well, but it doesn't say anything about it specifically. Unless with closed eyes of lust enjoy our arms around you, is that reference. And I agree with Naomi that snake skin world of sin is very, very nicely done. Scales of passion, you know, nice play on word there, snake scales, facing a forked tongue and a kiss of the moment's final sleep. It's a brilliant little piece, very creative brevity that addresses the whole story of Medusa, but from a totally different point of view. Well done.
Nice comment. And Pam, how about you?
I thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors, a really great flow in the reading of this poem. I really like how he used the story of Medusa and her appearance on a in a metaphorical type way, taking a look at addiction and temptation and how it draws us in. I was particularly drawn to enjoy the poison of our bite burning in your veins, feel the face of fantasy laughing in your brain. I feel like those lines really represent the idea of the drug going in to the veins and the body and the hallucination, which is therefore a consequence of the addiction. So wonderful write and very well done.
Nice comment, Pam. Yeah, I thought this was an awesome brevity, a well-penned piece on Medusa. And I thought it was a great take on the image. You know, I have to agree, you know, the voice of the snakes was novel and unique, and I really liked it very much. But great lines and imagery throughout. Well done, Grammy. Great brevity all the way around. Mm-hmm. Liked it, liked it, liked it. Wow. Okay, the next one. The next one I'm going to put up is called The Magician's Mortimer, Dog of Death. And this is actually by the poet, and I have an audio for this. So, Pam, whenever you're ready.
Magicians. Mortimer, Dog of Death. What are you wearing? Laughed the son of the King of the Grim Reapers, seeing his dad in a skirt with a dog head mask on his head. I'm going to pick up a pharaoh's soul in ancient Egypt, said the father. Like a dog in a skirt? Laughed the son. I meant to look like that god of death, moaned the father. Nice skirt, Mortimer. It suits you, said Dante, the assistant of the king. Joking? Not you too, Dante. You know I have to wear it to collect the Egyptians. Ed Mortimer, the Reaper King. Do you speak ancient Egyptian? Asked the necromancer, his son. No, I speak language of the gods, lied Mortimer. He then said truthfully, of course I do. I learned Egyptian, it's all part of my job. I'm meant to be Anubis, the jackal-headed god of death of ancient Egypt. Why are you going in cosplay to pick up the soul? Asked the son. He wouldn't follow anyone but his god here, said Mortimer. Why not send someone else to do the job? Asked the son. I couldn't imagine you in a skirt, said Mortimer. I don't do skirts, dresses maybe, said the son laughing. How are you going to ancient Egypt? Asked the son. Time travel, said Mortimer. Okay, said the son. Later in the past, Anubis met the soul of the dead pharaoh. Come with me, said the god, the perfect Egyptian. What did you say? Said the pharaoh in reply, not understanding. Wasn't the same language. It was an old Egyptian dialect. Mortimer didn't know. Damn, he doesn't speak modern Egyptian, moaned Mortimer in English. He ended up talking to him in mime, taken to the afterlife.
And okay. Pam, do you want to start us off on this one?
Absolutely. This is great, great storytelling. I love her use of dialogue and her imagery and the nice twist of humor that she puts in it with the whole idea of a Grim Reaper who is trying to adjust to a different culture and failing miserably. I thought this was quite entertaining and very well done.
Please comment, Pam. And Naomi, how about you?
Oh, yes, I was kind of chuckling throughout it. At the beginning, the idea of the skirt, he laughs, Dante and the son were laughing at the father. Nice skirt, Mortimer. It suits you. And then, they're laughing. And then after the son says, I don't do skirts, dresses maybe, he says laughing. And then the mix up with the language at the end. So yeah, like Pam said, it can be relatable to today when you're stuck in translation a bit, trying to figure out this new culture and the way to fit in, but great storytelling. I agree with Pam, and wonderful, wonderful tale told. So great job.
Absolutely. And Laurent, how about you?
I like the way he kind of humanizes these so-called gods. He's son of the king of the Grim Reapers. Seeing his dad in a skirt with a dog head mask on his head. When you think about the imagery of the Egyptians, some of it to the outside world might look a little strange, a little foolish almost. A dog or this or that. These animals really represent anything. So, yeah, from a Western point of view, you can poke a little fun at it. And the poet does exactly that. She humanizes these people. It gives them a little bit of vernacular, throws in a twist at the end, which is nicely done, and makes a very enjoyable piece.
Nice comment. Nice comment. I thought it was a story nicely told. A good sense of humor here, in the piece. And a clever take on the prompt with, as everyone stated, the different points of humor and what have you. I thought it was clever. So it was a nice job, and thank you for the share, the poet, and appreciate it. Okay. Let me see. Naomi, I'm going to ask you to read this next one. It's by Paul Brett, and it's called The Lion Sphinx Tonight. And it's a...
Oh, yeah. I read that one. I have to sing. Ah.
Well, you don't have to, but you can.
I'll sing the beginning. In the village, the peaceful village, the lion sings tonight. Oh, in the village, the peaceful village, the lion sings tonight. Oh, wimble back, a wimble back, a wimble back, a wimble back. Okay, that's the end of my singing. Doo-dee-doo-doo. Hush, my darling, don't fear, my darling, the lion sings tonight. Oh, hush, my darling, don't fear, my darling, the lion sings tonight. Doo-dee-doo-dee-doo-dee-doo. Oh, don't dee-doo-dee-doo-doo-doo. Oh.
Good job, Naomi. Good job. It was. Okay, Laurent, you want to start us off on this one?
Yeah, I love the play on words, the lion sings tonight, as opposed to the lion sings today. Yeah, the lion sphinx. It's a very humorous adaptation of the original song by, I should know the name of the group who sang that.
The Tokens.
Yeah. Well, no, I wasn't even thinking of the Tokens. The other guy with a really high pitch. Oh, the Four Seasons.
There you go.
Aren't they the one who made the big hit? I
don't know. The only one mentioned in the AN was the Tokens.
I thought the poem was very funny. A nice little parody, adaptation of the original. But by far, as entertaining, was Naomi's reading on it. Good job, Naomi.
Absolutely. I have to agree with that. Okay, Pam, that's going to bring me to you.
Well, I have to say it definitely was an absolute delight to listen to Naomi sing that. Very cool. I did have to get a chuckle out of this, especially with the twist on with the Lion Sphinx tonight. And, you know, it's just one of those catchy songs that everybody knows. So if somebody writes a parody about it, you know, I told Paul in my written comment that I couldn't resist singing it out loud. But thankfully, in my case, the only person tortured with my singing was my daughter.
yeah, right. I tortured like three other people here.
Your singing is lovely, sure.
That's funny.
But yeah, entertaining and really well done. And your singing was wonderful, Naomi.
That was the fun of it. Naomi, you want to comment next?
Oh yeah, like, you know, I just laughed. I laughed when I read this, and like Pam, I couldn't resist. You know, I sang it, you know, in my head as I was reading, and then I said, okay, I'm going to go for this. I'm going to sing it for real. And I did sing it, but thankfully I was alone. There's echoing. I don't know why there's this echoing going on. Okay, now it stopped. No, there it is again. But anyway, you know, but what a wonderful little write. This is just delightful. So thank you so much for the laugh, Paul Brout, you know, this cracked me up.
Yeah, I had to do the same thing. When I first read it, I'm like, I'm singing, I'm humming the tune in my head as I'm reading it going, yeah, okay, okay. And of course, I gave it a slight out loud song or sing, you know, which is, I kind of mutilated it here and there, but it's okay, you know, that's me. But I thought it was really well done, and I thought it was fun, you know, a fun read and enjoyable piece, and you know, great parody. I was not what I expected anyone to come up with for anything in this contest, but it was a nice change, a little change of pace, so I liked it a lot. So thank you, Paul, for sharing with us. Great job, good piece, absolutely. Okay, let me see now. I'm going to read this next one. Okay. This next piece is called The Majestic Unicorn by Daniel Duhame. So. Majestic Unicorn. From the bowls of history, sewn together from an enchanted spinning wheel, that brung life to the being of divine origin, from the thread of the golden fleece to bring life to a unicorn, stolen by Jason and the Argonauts, from foreign lands beyond the horizon. Only a rightful virgin can hold sway over a unicorn. To capture it, a woman pure of heart and soul may be brought before it. Then she may suckle it from her breast before leading it into the kingdom. Then she becomes its benefactor before giving up the ghost to Hades, training it to not be afraid of mortals, and allowing them to ride into the sky from its back. Unicorn horn was prized for its healing powers, that gave eternal life to the bearer of it, cured them of disease. Was a mane of white that glowed in the sunlight like a bright light, majestic in all its glory, until the animal was slaughtered for its magical horn, so that some may get rich from its power. But they neglected to think that once gone, it can never return to the mortal realm, because what had given it life was broken, ensuring that it stays locked in mythology forever. End poem. Oh, I'm supposed to do something now, aren't I? Laurent, you want to start us off on this comment? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I enjoyed a little bit of the backstory on the unicorn. He brings into the poem the mythological elements that we know about. I did not know that once the animal was slaughtered, it could not return to the mortal realm. You know, as Daniel says, ensuring that it stays locked in mythology forever. The unicorn is such a wonderful beast, especially in children's imagination and in mythology at large, for that matter. And I think that Daniel adapted the story really well, made it his own, and gave us a very interesting addition to the lexicon of the unicorn.
Nice. Nice comment. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, this was a wonderful tale told. It had that touch of sadness and darkness that really moved me. And I enjoyed and appreciated how he told the backstory of the unicorn. But it really was a sad, emotive tale on the whole idea of how this beautiful animal came to trust humanity only to be slaughtered for their own use. So very well done.
Nice.
Is that an echo coming from?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I don't hear it. Okay, I'm going to ask Naomi. I'm going to mute myself while I ask Naomi or while Naomi comments, and you can see if you still hear it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was muted all through that, so I don't think it comes from my end. Yeah, the majestic unicorn. Now, I knew the I knew the history. You know about it was only being seen by a virgin that was pure of heart and soul. Only them could approach it and see the unicorn. I knew that part, but you know the rest I didn't know, and so yeah, great lesson in mythology for sure for me. You know, I don't know if you know the last part that once gone it can never return to the mortal realm, because what had given it life was broken, ensuring that it stayed locked in mythology forever. Whether that's the truth of the you know mythology, or just you know Daniel's way to say, well, this is how unicorns were caught up in our mythology, and they stayed there forever, giving like a spin on the tale. So whatever it was, you know, it was wonderfully done by Daniel. And, you know, I really enjoyed this ride all the way through. So thank you so much.
Nice comment, Naomi. Yeah. Did anyone hear echoes then?
I didn't.
No.
Nope.
Laurent?
Did you hear echoes, Naomi?
No, I didn't hear echoes.
Okay. Well, they're probably back then. But I'm going to read this and then or we're going to comment and I'm going to put a piece up and then I'm going to call back in. Nicely penned piece, I thought. Much enjoyed the story he's penned here for the unicorn. I thought it was detailed and nicely done. So great job, Daniel, and thank you so much for writing for us and sharing. Now, let me find the next one, which, Laurent, this is going to be for you. And here goes. And Pam, I'll be right back.
Okay.
So, there we go. Okay, Laurent, whenever you're ready.
Immortality's demands come up short as close as I can. Phoenix. He calls me Phoenix, though I never rise from the ashes of love's abandon. Perhaps she just thinks it's pretty, the sight of me leaving, immortality's demand for a ransom. Perhaps she likes the irony of my falling in love with nothing, someone who can't stand the sight of me. Atlas. Immortality may come at a price, and if I come up short, I won't mind it, because I stayed writing. So in the end, I must have made something of my life. Christian Eagles, because it's time for a new mythology. And yeah, you can call it arrogant, but I'm a-making about me. And in the beginning, they were laughing then, but they haven't since. And if they do, I'm glad to remind them again that in these parts, I am what's happening. And the siren, to these no white noise poets, I am Osiris, the divine fire, and they know it. I am the shore that tides tried breaking. I am the giant, and I have awakened. And if I am anything, I am what God made me, what you couldn't pay me to change. The pugilist blue with a wide fucking range. So best bring buckets for the blood if you're thinking of taking on Atlas and holding up a universe of thoughts. Yes, heart of a harpy in love with a full moon, because you get to hear the wolf howl. Kiss of a phoenix in love with a moment, because soon you'll burn it all down. Dream eater, knife's edge. Sometimes I feel like my head is a theater, and I am the only one in the audience. That actually sounds quite nice. Sometimes it gets rather violent. Like angels with broken wings dancing on a knife's edge. Children beating the chests of parents, lifeless. Love the Midas. And the worst of the worst? That's just a mirror on the stage. With me looking back with a smile. She was funny. No Antithesis. I am no Achilles. I am no Alexander. I am no Athena. I am no Artemis. And yet I languish in desert suns that don't exist, bleeding heels, winning the one fight I wouldn't survive. And yet I conquer, not push borders on a map, but build empires in the black, that nothingness man can't understand. And yet I birth beauty beyond consciousness's compare, if only they didn't feel the need to strip everything bare, just to see how it beats. And yet, I hunt for another chance of getting as close to good as I can. End poem.
Great read there, Laurent, and what a wonderful write by Ben. Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, I was gone for a while. Can you come back to me, Pam?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. All right, well, I guess that leaves me. I would like to, all right, let's see here.
Take one for the team, babe. Take one for the team.
Take one for the team. Yeah, exactly. But I like this. I really like how he took this on a both metaphorical and personal. As always, it's a beautifully written vignette, powerful imagery and metaphors. I think the first part with the phoenix, she calls me phoenix, though I never rise from the ashes of love's abandon, speaks on the idea of how people see us differently than we see ourselves. And then in the second part, he starts to get this kind of confidence of this. It's almost like a journey of personal discovery where you find your own strength. Frisian Eagles because it's time for a new mythology. And yeah, you can call it arrogant, but I'm making it about me. And in the beginning, they were laughing, but they haven't since. You know, oftentimes what people find to be foolhardy is the one are the things that truly speak to your heart, and you have to continue to move forward. And another part I really liked was, and yet I conquer, not push borders on a map, but build empires in the black that nothingness man can't understand, and yet I birth beauty beyond consciousness. Compare if only they didn't feel the need to strip everything bare just to see how it beats. You know, I like how that fits in the idea of people who are willing to destroy and tear everything apart rather than just sit back and appreciate it. And I think that speaks well on poetry, but I also think it speaks well on any art form or any way we wish to express our individuality. So wonderful, right, and very well done. And welcome back, Jean.
Hi. What's up?
What's up? What does that mean? What's up? Come on.
What's up,
Milan? Comment, dear. Comment.
I know what I'm supposed to do.
Uh-oh.
So far, I'm the only one who's commented
first
on
off,
this poem so far.
First off, I was off because I was trying to call back. And then I called back, and Pam muted me again because I obviously was bringing an echo back with me. So then I signed off again. So, I'm trying to keep up with everybody here. I know what I have to do. Thank you. Just saying. So anyway, this was another great piece by Ben Hart. I appreciated each of the vignettes. I thought they were well done. I have to say that this part of one, I am the siren. To these no white noise poets, I am Osiris, the divine fire, and they know it. I am the shore that tides tried breaking. I am the giant, and I have awakened. And if I am anything, I am what God made me. What you couldn't pay me to change, the pugilist blue in the wide fucking range. So best bring buckets for the blood if you're thinking of taking on Atlas, holding up a universe of thoughts. Each one of these vignettes I found to be powerful in its own right, and this one kind of stood out to me in that respect. So nice work, Ben Hart, and great piece, as always. Thanks for sharing. And I think you said you were the only one to comment, right, Pam? So, Laurent, would you like to comment on this?
Sure.
Yeah, I suppose it's poetic justice that the person I so lovingly chided stole every bit of the thunder that I had saved up and left me with nothing to say except what you said. To me, the most impressive part of this excellent piece was number two, Atlas. Top to bottom, it's a bit of brilliance, especially the part that you read, Jean, I am the siren to these no white noise poets, et cetera, et cetera. But that last bit, I am what God made me, what you couldn't pay me to change, the fugitive's blue with a wide fucking range, so best bring buckets for the blood if you're thinking of taking on Atlas, holding up a universe of thoughts. If you're going to mess with somebody who knows what he's talking about and has the ammunition to keep everybody at bay in terms of a universe of thoughts, you've got to be careful. You better be as good as he is. That's just a brilliant, brilliant piece. Especially, I am what God made me. Well, you couldn't pay me to change. No, I am happy with who I am. And if you're going to ask me to change or think of taking me on, you're going to be in trouble because I am Atlas holding up a universal thought. Great, great piece.
Absolutely. Okay, great comment. Great comment. Naomi. How about you?
Yes.
Well, you know, I was late to Ian because I was gone like you were, Jean. And, you know, so I was late to getting into this poem. But, you know, I listened to all the comments and I read it really over it quickly. And I reread that title. I keep going back to the title, which is Immortality Demands Come Up Short, you know, or As Close As I Can. And then I go back to that last final stanza, and yet I hunt for another chance of getting as close to good as I can. So, you know, I love how he, you know, his rights are always so layered. Ben Hart his rights are. And you know how he took each one, like the Phoenix, you know, Atlas, and, you know, even the Harpy. He has the Harpy in there. And, you know, so many other ones. And, you know, he just related the whole right to him as a poet writing. And, you know, of course, you know, he hunts for another chance of getting as close to good as he can. And so this is a very relatable poem to all of us poets, and very well done. That's what I got out of it.
Nice comment, Anna. Okay, so Pam, that's going to bring me back to you. And this piece is Scandalous Siren Sings by Jenny the Deep. So whenever you're ready.
Salacious siren singing seductively, scandalously promising happily ever after, manipulating men reproductively as songs of seduction turn into evil laughter, scandalously promising happily ever after, her sapphire seas swallow ships of thieves as songs of seduction turn into evil laughter, descending to the trenches, flooding men's dreams. Sapphire seas swallow ships of thieves. With pale blue skin and hazel hair, she swims, descending to the trenches, flooding men's dreams, making them drown in the blood of their sins. With pale blue skin and hazel hair, she swims, enchanting men of all kind with her voice, making them drown in the blood of their sins, never giving them a real chance or choice. Enchanting men of all kind with her voice, coming to her, she takes them under her wing, never giving them a real chance or choice. They meet their demise as she rises again to sing. End poem.
Nice read, Pam. Naomi, you want to start us off on this one?
Oh, come on. My mute button got stuck. Sorry. Yeah, this is an amazing write by Jenny, you know, on the, you know, I said I didn't do my homework, but I did do a little bit of research. So, you know, the mermaid was actually a good thing, and then when she turned bad, she became a siren, and so you know, this is a wonderful write on Jenny, from Jenny, that, you know, that illustrates here, you know, how the siren lures in the, you know, in the those fishermen or those sailors to their watery grave, you know. She just lures them in with her sweet songs and her beauty, and you know, till they drown. So I thought this had amazing, wonderful imagery throughout. She put in bits and pieces of alliteration, like sapphire seas swallow ships. You know, so, and there's a little bit, I thought, you know, throughout it, I heard a bit of inner rhyme as well in places. So, you know, beautiful flow. and beautiful flow, beautiful rhythm, rhyme, and wonderfully done by Jenny and Dee.
Nice comment, Naomi. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, it's hard to dislike this in any way. The alliteration, the form, the pantoum, two things that she focuses on in this poem along with the rhyme, give it a very formal presence in terms of the way it's written. And yet it's kind of freewheeling in terms of what it says. The salacious sirens singing seductively, scandalously promising, happily ever after, manipulating men reproductively as songs of seduction turn into evil laughter. She gives us the same format for seduction, the singing, drawing the men in. We never really know what she says, at least I never do, but Jenny uses the word scandalously, salacious, seduction. So the promises that she's making to the men are obviously things that are going to grip them reproductively, as she says. To me, the standout line was sapphire seas swallow ships of thieves. That is really well written. The description, pale blue skin, hazel hair, gives an image of the mermaid, the siren, to us in a way that perhaps that I haven't thought about it. You know, I just always assume, hey, you know, she's going to look like a regular person. Just, you know, she's got a tail and she swims and she sings and she swims. I thought it was interesting, the line, making them drown in the blood of their sins, never giving them a real chance or choice. I'm not saying this is religious in any way, but the blood of their sins does speak to a religious dogma, if you will, about what happens when you sin and the price that you have to pay. So from that point of view, it was nuanced and a beautiful write all in all. Really enjoyed it.
Nice. Okay, and Pam?
I thought this was wonderful. I really like how she takes us into the world of the siren and her seductions, which bring men down into their watery graves. Great rhyme and flow, nice use of alliteration, really quite a captivating write. And the part I really liked was the second stanza, but especially at the beginning lines of that stanza, scandalously promising happily ever after, her sapphire seas swallow ships of thieves, as songs of seduction turn into evil laughter. You know, wonderful lines and very well done.
Nice. Nice comment, Pam. Yeah, I thought this was a nicely penned piece by Jenny. Great story and use of alliteration, and I really enjoyed it. I liked her choice of form for this piece. I think the pantoum fit it very well. You know, with pale blue skin and hazel hair, she swims, enchanting men of all kind with her voice, making them drown in the blood of their sins, never giving them a real chance or choice. Enchanting men of all kinds with her voice, coming to her, she takes them under her wing, never giving them a real chance or choice. They meet their demise as she rises again to sing. The repetition of the lines for the pantoum, I think, is what really makes it, this is an exaggeration of it, but it makes it kind of hypnotic. Because it just keeps, you know, mulling in your brain. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you hear it again and then again and then again. I think it has a nice effect. That's the word. Anyway, great job, Jenny, and thanks for sharing. That's the first day of the day. That was Pam. Naomi, I'm going to ask you to read the next one. And this is called Mermaids of the Secret Sea by Sea Opal. And if anybody knows about a mermaid, it should be someone by the name of Seogle. That's what I got to say.
Yeah.
So whenever you're ready, honey.
Okay. Mermaids of the Secret Sea. The princess mermaid of the bay dives now under the crested waves, wrapped in swirls of lemon sunlight. Sailors, Nemo, captains recall, tempest visions under starfall, castles made of coquina and pearls, museums of the seaweed people, and thrones of mermaid kings. In this turquoise lagoon, merfolk realm of golden sands, planted cities, fossils and shipwrecks, flower mezzanines and nautilus caves, myriads of mermaids in ocean colors, a billion species of fish and seashells, cocoons of Neptunia snails, vessels that travel the seven seas. There, off the Dauphin Bay, you catch a glimpse, Nereid, sea nymph kiss, in lapping aquamarine waves. The queen scales appear as tiny diamonds, moss-green eyes that follow you in dreams, the visions of Helen of Troy and Aphrodite, the smooth skin and pearlescent bones, mermaid goddess of the water world. End quote. Oh, my gracious, there's so much noise in the background as I was reading.
I was quiet. And if it's my phone, then we're out of luck because I have no other way to handle it. But, Ron, would you like to comment first?
Yeah, that was a great read, by the way, Abby. Mermaids are one of those things that you kind of don't want to meet because odds are they're going to siren your ass and then you're going to be in trouble. Although there have been stories of mermaids rescuing sailors who are cast into the oceans. A lot of people say that dolphins were mistaken for mermaids. The dolphins would also help save sailors by falling into the water. But this particular poem presents mermaids in myriads of mermaids in ocean colors, a billion species of fish and seashells, cocoons of Neptunia snails, vessels that travel the seven seas. She gives us images of the mermaid in language that is really enthralling. You catch a glimpse, Nereid, sea nymph kiss, and lapping aquamarine waves, sequin scales appear as tiny diamonds. I love the descriptions of the mermaid. She brings in Helen of Troy, Aphrodite, and finishes with a mermaid goddess of the water world. Now, I wasn't aware that there was actually a mermaid goddess or whether Seopel is simply assigning that title to the character, but it's beautifully done. The first stanza that opens the poem is really well done. The museums of the seaweed people, the thrones of mermaid queens, that brought a smile to my face, as did in this turquoise lagoon, merfolk realm of golden sand. Really, the descriptive qualities in this poem are excellent.
Great comment, Laurent. And Pam, how about you?
Oh, I really enjoyed this. And I think you're right, Jean, about how somebody named Seopel should know a thing or two about mermaids. I'm looking at her list, and she's got a list of poems titled Mermaids, and that has 154 on it, 154 mermaid poems.
Wow.
So, yeah. Yep. Very cool. Very cool. I can see why she was attracted to this prompt. But this has such wonderful rhyme and flow, really spot on, beautiful use of imagery. It's one of those poems where, because of its use of imagery and especially colors, you know, it's like somebody painting with words. And she really does bring the mermaid world to life in full and glorious color. And I really liked all three stanzas, but it was the second one with the turquoise lagoon and a merciless realm of golden sands that really spoke to me. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Nice comment, Pam. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, you know, Laurent used the word enthralling, and Pam said, you know, this was like a painted words on the page. And, you know, I agree. This is a poem that makes you jealous of the poet, you know. Envy their masterful way with words, you know, the flow, the beautiful imagery, you know, how she spun these wonderful word choices, you know, all together to form this beautiful, stunning, really stunning poem. So bravo, Sea Opal. You're the mistress of the mermaids. Right. So wonderful, wonderfully done.
Right. You know, in that respect, Pam, when you said about her list, I looked over there. She had 154 for mermaids. She had 109 for ocean fantasy. And she had 205 for women, myths, and more. I mean, you know, what can I say, right? It's like, win. But absolutely. I thought it was a beautifully written tale, great imagery, wonderful descriptions, and use of colors throughout. And I'm with Pam. You know, in this turquoise lagoon, merfolk realm of golden sands, Atlas cities, fossils and shipwrecks, flowered mezzanines and nautilus caves, myriads of mermaids and ocean colors, a billion species of fish and seashells, cocoons and Neptunia snails, vessels that travel the seven seas. Just wonderful imagery there. And you can almost envision the whole scene in front of you as you read from the beginning to the end. It kind of has this wonderful, I have a wonderful vision of it in my mind. So wonderful job, and thank you so much, Sea Opal. Great to have you join in on the contest. Okay, next. Oh, sorry. Laurent, I'm going to ask you to read this next one by Tom Time Tiller.
All right.
Open whenever you're ready.
Okay. The conspiracy. It was a bleary, cold, damp morning. I woke to the alarm at 5 a.m. and eating breakfast, I noticed even Nitro was yawning over her food bowl. "Late night, kid," I said. She looked up, eyes that lasered you through the heart. She growled, laughing her tongue around her jowls, her food spewing all around her. I could have called her Antush if I wanted to. After all, she had grown up protecting the mother-in-law, harbinger of death, the lord of the underworld. And since our divorce, her daughter, my ex-wife, Kebichette, only joking, Carrie, insisted we had called her Nitro. I said at the time, it's a boy's name. And she muttered something about sexism. Fact, that she was a rescue dog with a penchant, sudden bursts of aggression. Nitro was a perfect name. So it is, every morning, breakfast with Antput/Nitro, and sitting across the breakfast table from Kemchet, now divorced, wondering which one is more likely to bite my head off. Carrie had a liking for aggressive cat animals. I was once a bouncer at the nightclub where we first met. Anubis, they called me. I guarded the doors and guided the poor lost souls in and out, up in taxis, and took care of any untoward happenings. So you see, Carrie found me exciting, like she finds Antwerp last night show exhilarating, knowing that at any minute he might go off on one. That's why I had decided it was today, after Carrie had left for work, I would take night show slash Antwerp and have her put down. I will guide her spirit to Osiris, show her the way, because sometimes in life, you just have to do what you have to do. Here, girl, who's a good girl then? He growls and bares her teeth, almost like she knows what I have in mind. After breakfast, Carrie leaves for work. I get ready. Not going to be easy getting Nitro slash and put to the vet. I look for her cage, remembering that we had to hide it from her behind the sofa in the spare bedroom. Next was her lead, a studded jewel encrusted leather strap that dug deep into your hand every time Nitro slash Enfoot pulled on one of our root marches. I would be dragged halfway across town. Then there was her toy, a favorite, a manky, chewed-up doll. Somewhat macabre, I thought. A little doll with teeth for the growling, snarling monster. Next came the bribes. Dog chalk. It always scared the pants off me when I gave Nitro treats. Carrie insisted we held them in the open palm of our hands so she could get to trust us. Well, it worked for Carrie. Every time, I thought I was going to lose my hand. As Nitro slash Enfoot snarled and growled, baring yellow teeth and piercing me with tortured, demented eyes, moved forward to take the chocolate. I would give a hesitatingly false, reassuring grin and laugh. Here you go, girl. And just to make sure, the trust from her grew every time I would eat one in front of her. Sometimes two or three, if such times required it. And taking her to bed for such a time. In the hallway, her cage open, trying to persuade the Nitro slash Antfoot into it. Here, girl, I'm chalky. Look, yummy, very good. Look, Daddy's eating one. And look, Daddy's eating another. Come on, girl. It was then that I started to feel it. That sticky tiredness that says you're slipping out of consciousness. Going on, I thought. I fell to the floor. It was then a woman with a jackal head stood over me, laughing and licking her lips. Harry, I thought. You bitch, I mumbled to myself. All along she knew, and she knew I would eat the chocolates to persuade Nitro slash Edward into the cage. Last thing I remembered, feeling the jaws wrap. End thought.
Oh, dear. Okay, Naomi, do you want to start us off?
Oh, my gracious, yeah. This is such an enjoyable, well-written piece from Time Teller. It was captivating all through, and you know what? Laurent's reading of it was just amazing. You did it justice, Laurent. You brought out all the life in it, you know, with your the way you said the voices and everything, the conversation. But, you know, this is just amazing. I just laughed, you know, at the beginning, you know, and then the part with the mother-in-law, the harbinger of death, the lord of the underworld. My gracious, that was so good. And then, you know, the ex, my the ancestor divorced her daughter, my ex, white Kevin. And then the dog. Oh my gracious, the dog. This is such a clever, witty write and so entertaining. I really enjoyed it. So bravo. You know, the way incorporated all the mythological personages into the write too was just so witty, so clever. So bravo.
Absolutely. Great comment, Naomi. And Pam, how about you?
Oh, I have to agree with Naomi. This is so wonderfully entertaining with great, dark, twisted humor. I really enjoy and appreciate how he brings Egyptian mythology into modern times with these clever, biting lines, this dark humor, the interaction between the characters. And I really did like the twist at the end, you know, and falling, and I fell to the floor. It was then a woman with a jackal head stood over me laughing and licking her lips. Carrie, I thought, you bitch, I mumbled to myself. All along she knew. You know, just great storytelling, highly entertaining, and very well done.
Absolutely. And Laurent, how about you? Great read, by the way.
Thank you. Well, somebody mentioned the word enthralling before. This is equally enthralling. I like my humor dry. This is wonderfully dry and witty. It doesn't try to be funny. It just is funny. And I think that's the difference. Very, very matter-of-factly. Everything follows, you know, a dog called Nitro. Well, sure, if it's that kind of a dog, that makes sense. The way it's used within the poem is perfectly delightful. And assigning the Egyptian names, of course. And, of course, I do agree with Naomi on the mother-in-law bit. It was really, really funny. And, again, the way he describes himself. I was once a bouncer at the nightclub when we first met. I knew this thing called me. Very offhanded. Very dry, very funny because of that. I really like this piece. Hell of a piece. Great write.
Absolutely. Nice comments. Yeah, I thought it was a very well-written tale. Clever drawing mythology. I was just chuckling all the way through. And, yeah, I'm with everybody. The bit about the mother-in-law just really had me going. I didn't mute myself. I was like, oh, no, because I wasn't sure where it was going from there. I thought each character written in so nicely, you know, because he had the mother-in-law and her and his ex-wife and the dog and himself. I just thought it was really clever and well-written, and I thought it was a great ending and nicely done, so I really enjoyed it. So thank you for sharing with us, Time Teller. Great piece. Yes, yes, yes. Now, let me see what I have here. Next piece I'm going to put up is called The Bridled Beak by Bill Siller. And I'm going to give this one a read. The Bridled Beak. Ripped from the epic pages of Orlando Furioso, the hippogriff's life is lost between a bird and a foal. Duality is gruesomeness of biological despair. Even Medusa was more woman than serpent in spite of venomous hair. And women have been sharing with snakes from the start of mortal heirs. The hippogriff is more addled of mind. Does it require feathers or saddle, beak or bridle? Believes more weak and less wild than its cousin the griffin. How unlucky and disturbing. This griffin's body of lion, it's shunned from Kentucky Derby. If flapping wings or galloping hooves, hippogriff thinks some are stranger. From Daedalus and Icarus to Silver's Masked Ranger and home. Pam, you want to kick this one off?
Absolutely. Great read there, Jean. I thought this was a wonderful write with a great use of imagery. And I like how he delves into the idea of the mythical stories and their twists and turns that create the monsters. And, you know, he takes a very sympathetic look at the poor hippogriff, who nobody could seem to make up their mind what it was, what its purpose was. The hippogriff has more addled of mind. Does it require feathers or saddle, beak or bridle? Believe more weak and less wild than his cousin the griffin. how unlucky and disturbing. You know, and there's a great humor in this, especially with Griffin's Body of Lion, it's shunned from Kentucky Derby. I really enjoyed this, and it was very well done.
Nice, nice comment, Pam. And Lorraine, how about you?
Yeah, Pam, that was a great comment, and I love the title, The Bridal Beak. This is an excellent poem by Bill. I'm not sure who Orlando Furioso is. Somebody could help me out on that. That would be nice. But duality is gruesomeness of biological despair. Even Medusa was more woman than serpent in spite of venomous hair, and women have been sharing with snakes from the start of mortal eras. A lot of references in those three lines. The duality represented by the line, does it require feathers or saddle, beak or bridle? It's really quite funny. And with the Griffin's Body of Lion shunned from the Kentucky Derby, it's also funny. And I can't believe I managed to squeeze in Silver's Mass Ranger. He draws from a variety of societal whatever's it escapes me. But the references, societal references, common movies, et cetera. Charles was nice references. I thought he did a great job of this piece. Really loved it.
Nice comment. And Naomi, how about you?
Oh, I have to agree. I really like this piece. You know, I laughed at, you know, that same line with Griffin Body or Lion of Lion, it's shunned from Kentucky Derby. And, you just don't know what exactly this creature is, you know, and it's so true. You know, what is it? My gracious, you know, it's a mixture of all these body parts, like slaughtered off and put pieced together again. You know, what is the hippogriff? You know, what is it exactly? And, you know, he really illustrates that throughout the poem. So very well done, Bill, and a great write. Amazingly well written.
Nice comment, Naomi. Lauren, I put that definition up in the room for you. For the Orlando Furioso.
Furioso. All right, and that reminded me of something. Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a poem, I believe, from what I saw. But I thought this was a clever take on the hippogriff. The hippogriff itself, I found to be an intriguing prompt, and I thought it was a clever take on that prompt because I kept going, "What is the hippogriff? I don't think I've ever heard of one." You know, through all my troubles of mythology and everything else, I just didn't recognize it. But I thought it was clever and much enjoyed. So thank you for the share, Bill. Now, Laurent, you want to explain to us what I sent you in the room? Because I just copied it and put it in there.
Oh, Orlando Furioso translates to The Frenzy of Orlando is an Italian epic poem by Ludovico Ariosto, which has exerted a wide influence on later culture. The earliest version appeared in 1516, although the poem was not published in its complete form until 1532. What originally kicked off my interest in the name was, it was also the name of a character in one of those post-apocalyptic films. It was like the fourth film in the series that, Sons of the Thunderdome bit with the singer. I'm not making good references.
I know what you mean. I'm trying to think. You said Thunderdome, right?
Yeah, well, that appeared in a movie.
You mean the Mad Max movies?
Yes, thank you very much. In the Mad Max series, the latest one had a female protagonist. Her name was something Furiosa. I forget her first name. But that reminded me of that.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I didn't know.
Wasn't really worth much of a mention. I'm sorry, I opened my mouth.
Well, just, you know, It all works.
But thank you for the information.
The next piece I'm going to put up is called Fiddlers and Faux Pas Riddles by Eric Swenson. And I have an audio for this. So, Pam, whenever you are ready.
Fiddlers and Faux Pas Riddles. Skip the icing, check the cake. What's really at stake? Southern line poet purveys a fashion parade. Posh Sphinx presents itself. Dandy, debonair, dressed to the hilt. Flowers wilt, but we don't tilt. First riddle pandered. Which creature has one voice and yet becomes four-footed, two-footed, and three-footed? Rock of ages cleft for me. A man who crawls on all fours as a baby, then walks on 2 feet as an adult, and using a stick in his old age. Let my reason not turn into old age treason. Fiddlers and Faux Pas Riddles. Second riddle, riddle proffered. They are two sisters. One gives birth to the other, who in turn gives birth to the first. Who are they? High celestial heliokinesis chariot, swing low. Day and night, the answer. Duality dances us again. Skip the icing, rake the cake. True love turned water to wine at Canaan wedding feast. Tall trees may become crucifixion crosses. Dressed to the nines, we don't wilt or tilt. Due process, sacred life sanctity, stashed beyond ballroom blitz duality. Skip the icing, dissect fear's layered cake. Four-faced cherubs shone before a seeking John. Beyond all doubted shadows appeared a man's face, a mighty lion, a stalwart bull, and a majestic eagle. North, south, west, east, truth's yeast raises breads unleavened. End poem.
Great job. Laurent, do you want to start us off on this?
Well, you were going to take a shot at it, but that's all right. I'll be happy to try. Fiddlers and Faux Pas Riddles. Now, when you look at the picture of the lion, he's majestic. He's dressed like a 15th century king. And he's in charge. It's fairly obvious to me. Skip the icing, check the cake. What's really at stake? He introduces the image, Southern Lion poet purveys a fashion parade. Posh Sphinx presents itself. We get this line of all the mythological figures who begin to come in, and they're asks them riddles, I believe, because this is based on the ancient riddle of the Sphinx. People would travel enormous distances to come and ask, and the Sphinx would respond with riddles, which I think is what's going on here. And he presents us as the first riddle, the very riddle that it takes place in the mythological story. A man, a baby, and an old man are the answers to the riddle
that he asks becomes four-footed, two-footed, and three-footed. I did not know the second griddle, which that's amusing by play there. High celestial heliokinesis chariot. Wonderfully descriptive. It gives us the answer day and night. Duality dunce dances us again. And it moves into the Bible. True love turned water to wine at Canaan wedding feast. Direct references, followed by tall trees, may become crucifixion crosses. Yes. You know, and depending on what's going on, they'll shut that sucker down and put you up on it. However, dressed to the nines, we don't wilt or tilt because we appreciate our lives, sacred lives, stash beyond ballroom blitz duality. What is important enough to continue beyond that ballroom blitz, which is also a great reference to a recent rock song. I'm not sure who did it. Four-faced cherub shone before seeking John. I'm not sure of that line. I got my suspicions, but no. And then we are left with the image of a man's face, a mighty lion, a star of gold, majestic eagle, north, south, west, east. I think he's representing various areas of the world and how we view truth. And I think so, because truth's yeast raises bread to leaven, which works as an explanation for the entire poem. I thought it was a work of genius, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to agree with you. I mean, I'm totally lost, but your explanations made perfect sense all the way through. I just saw the truth. Pam, how about you?
I really like the imagery and metaphors in this, and the use of alliteration. I like how he presents a couple of classic riddles and, to me, offers up this idea of how we seek truth, the truth to life, and oftentimes find the answer in love. I really like true love turned water to wine at Canaan wedding feast. And tall trees may become crucifixion crosses, dressed to the nines. We don't wilt or tilt. Due process, sacred life, sanctity, stash beyond ballroom blitz duality. To me, the ballroom blitz duality is the whole idea of, you know, putting on, you know, like acting all high and mighty, like you're worth more than anybody else, when really all of life is a beautiful thing to be enjoyed. And so wonderful, wonderful, right, and very well done.
Absolutely. Naomi, are you back yet? Great comment, Pam. Are you on mute? Just in case. You know, I have to say, you know, I was reading this along with Laurent, and I'm going, or not with Laurent, with Eric, and I'm going, It's a really in-depth piece, as most of Eric's are, and I thought it was just cleverly put together. And it kind of an awesome take on the prompt. Because, you know, when I looked at that prompt, I thought, but, yeah, it just kind of made me go, I don't know. Like, you know, I wasn't sure how I thought about that image, you know, being referred to as a sphinx, you know, in my brain. I was like, I don't know. But he definitely took this somewhere in such a clever fashion, you know, between I'm sorry?
I said, I was agreeing with you.
Oh, I just didn't hear what you said. I think that the riddles were a clever take in there, and there was just so much going on, as always, you know, and he always has tons of references he pulls from all different directions. This one, he kind of stayed in within a certain boundary. He wasn't, like, pulling things from all the way over there. You know, sometimes I get laughing because Eric pulls things in. I'm like, whoa, where'd that come from? You know, and I always admire his creativity in that respect. This was, I thought, really well done and clever. And no, Laurent, I would never have taken this comment first. You can bet on it. I was like, wait a minute, I really have to think about it. But, you know, skip the icing, dissect fear's layer cake, four-faced cherubs shown before the seeking John. You know, and then up here it's skip the icing, rake the cake, true love turned water into wine at Canaan wedding feast. I'm like, wait a minute, you know. So sometimes I have trouble just keeping up with the pace of thought. But it was really a clever piece and really well done, and an intriguing take on that prompt, as always. You know, I have to say that. Now, Naomi, are you back yet?
Yeah, I just got back. And, you know, I just want to say, you know, quickly that I'm happy to be back, you know, after all the summer gone. And I'm happy to hear Eric Svensson's wonderful voice on the SoundCloud again. So, yeah, and wonderful writer, you know, clever master of words again, alliteration, and wonderful, clever take on the prompt.
Yes, I agree. Okay, so thank you, Eric, for sharing with us tonight, by the way. I don't think I said that after my comment. Let me see now. I have one here. The next one I'm going to put up is by Stelina. And let's see if I can find the room. There it is. This is called The Mermaid's Dream by Stelina. And we have an audio for this, Pam. Pam?
Yeah, I'm having technical issues. I think I need you to push play. Sorry.
Okay.
Oh, there we go.
She sits atop the rugged rocks and seductively sings, her dewy ivory skin downy soft as a swan's wings. She dreams of her landlocked love with sea blue eyes, and the sky echoes with her lovelorn sighs. Mistress Luna, her confidant, listens with compassion, for she longs for a magical gown to be fashioned, with hues of the ocean shimmering like the brightest star, one which would take her into his world so afar. Dancing in his arms like a butterfly floating on air, a mere dream with a fishtail, tears fall in despair. Then Luna casts her benevolent smile upon this beauty rare, with silver threads from moonbeams catches up her raiment fair. In starlight it swirls and waltzes with her in the salty spray, then adorns her fair countenance as her tail fades away. As mellifluous music serenely streams from the land, she spies the object of her desire holding out his hand. Her heart leaps with joy as they dance through the night, but as dawn kisses the waiting sky, her happiness takes flight. She woefully watches as her beloved's face begins to pale at the sudden sight of her luminous, scaly tail. Then, in a flourish, she melted away into the foam, blew him a fond kiss of farewell, saying, "No more shall I roam. I shall return, my love, to you each day when twilight falls. Evermore shall you hear the sound of my captivating calls."
Wow, great piece. Naomi, would you like to start us off on this?
Yeah, wonderful sound cloud as usual from Selena. Wow, I just love her voice. I say that every time. But, you know, so true. She has such a beautiful voice. And, this is full of amazing imagery, wonderful metaphors, a wonderful story told, a sad story, a haunting story of, love that is only, during the nighttime, when she changes into the womanly form, the mermaid does. But, wonderfully told with beautiful poetic lines all through and brilliantly executed by Selena. So well done, Selena.
Nice comment, Naomi. Lauren, how about you? Off mute?
Sorry, I had to get off mute. Wild ocean waves welling within tumbling tresses, which dance in the briny breeze's caresses. She dreams of her landlocked love with sea-blue eyes, as the sky echoes with her love-lord sighs. The legend of sirens, of men being called to their death. Many stories exist of mermaids who lure a human with their appearance, with their voice, with their beauty. And an offshoot of that are the stories of the mermaids who fall in love hopelessly, because they're a creature of the ocean with a human male, landlocked. And, of course, the satisfactory resolution never really takes place because they're so different. Yet here we have Mistress Luna, who sees to it that the mermaid gets what she wishes, that magical gown to be fashioned with hues of the ocean, shimmering like the brightest star, one which would take her into his world. So afar, this was the ticket for her to join him. He spied the object of her desire, holding out his hand, her heart leapt with joy as they danced through the night. Of course, the denouement, when light begins to appear, she woefully watched as her beloved's face began to pale, sudden sight of a luminous scaly tail. And that would seem to be the end of it, but no, she does not let that discourage her. She proclaims, "No more shall I roam. I shall return my love to you each day when twilight falls. Evermore shall you hear the sound of my captivating calls." This kind of assumes that he's willing to put up with that kind of treatment, yet here's where the mermaid is kind of like the siren. He's not being lured to death, he's being lured to pleasure. Those captivating calls will bring him back again and again. It's a great story, and it's beautifully told by Selena. Really, really entertaining piece.
Agreed. Pam, how about you?
This has wonderful imagery, great rhyme and flow. It's beautiful storytelling. I really like how she makes the moon the confidant, the guardian of this mermaid. Really a lovely tale on the idea of a mermaid who wishes to be on land, to be with her true love. And the idea of love between people of two very different worlds who have a limited time together. I thought this was beautifully written all the way through. I did really like Mistress Luna, her confidant, listens with compassion, for she longs for a magical gown to be fashioned. And then it really pulled at my heartstrings when it said, her happiness took flight. She woefully watched as her beloved's face began to pale at the sudden sight of her luminous scaly tail. Such an emotive line on the idea of suddenly feeling rejected. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a wonderful piece. Wonderfully penned piece by Stelena, wonderful imagery and a great tale told. As always, you know, it's fabulous audio. But I enjoyed so many lines throughout the entire piece, it was really hard for me to pull anything from it. But I have to say, I was kind of leaning towards that second stanza, along with the final couplet. You know, I thought it was just a wonderful piece and an excellent, excellent job with this. So thank you, Stelena, so much for sharing with us, as always. Great job. Great job. Okay, so the next one I'm going to put up is by Naomi. Imagine that. Okay, let me drop it in the room, and here we go. Naomi, whenever you're ready.
Okay, yeah, I put this together real fast. This is what came to my mind. Atop my jewelry box. Atop my jewelry box given to me at 10 still dances round and round the soul of the universe woven into a sparkling white-winged horse, Pegasus, beloved by the gods. As a child, I would watch the mythical creature swirling, each second expanding into a magical fantasy land, as if he pranced in slow motion. I would imagine him taking off in a deep roar of thunder and crashing lightning bolts, galloping onward despite the danger, four hooves meeting earth in full valor, and I on his back with sword drawn, a mighty warrior princess, Pegasus' mane unfurling bright, twisting gaily in the wind as a trunk of a tree, the wispy ends, branches reaching outward, a vision of wintry wonderland upon his great and balanced a queen head. And
nice work. And Laurent, would you like to start us off with this one?
Yeah. But I found so charming about this piece in particular is that we have the wonderful imagination and emotions of a child at 10 revisited by the adult who is looking backwards at the child and able to voice what went on much more skillfully perhaps, yet without losing the wonder that a child would have looking at that jewelry box with a white-winged horse, Pegasus. And I think that that's what makes this such an appealing write, not just the excellent writing, because it is Pegasus' mane unfurling bright, twisting gaily in the wind, as the trunk of a tree, the wispy ends, branches reaching outward, a vision of wintry wonderland upon his great and balanced and private head. Oh, that is such... It is very, very good. It really is. It has flow, has rhythm, has imagery. It's well done. Nice job, Zayla.
Thank you, Laura.
And Pam, how about you?
Oh, this is absolutely wonderful. You know, I really like the direction this prompt took you, Naomi. A beautiful, nostalgic write on how the imagination of a child is sparked by a music box, and especially by the Pegasus that's upon it. You know, and there is something about horses of any type, regular horses, winged ones, unicorns, that really do spark and allow the imagination of a child to soar. And I like this all the way through, but especially I would imagine him taking off in a deep roar of thunder and crashing lightning bolts, galloping onward despite the danger, four hooves meeting earth in full valor. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Yeah, Naomi, I have to agree with that. Valent and Pam, you know, it's a great job. Wonderful take on the prompt. Great imagery as well as full of imagination. I really liked it. Excellent work. You know, I pulled out to atop my jewelry box given to me at 10. Still dances round and round the soul of the universe. Woven into the sparkling white-winged horse, Pegasus, beloved by the gods. As a child, I would watch the mystical creature swirling each second, expanding into a magical fantasy land as if he pranced in slow motion. I really enjoyed the piece all the way around. So nice work, and thanks for sharing.
Thank you so much, everybody.
You're welcome.
Now, just threw that together, did you?
That's it.
I said,
yeah.
You just threw that together, didn't you?
Yeah.
Pretty good throwing. Pretty good throwing.
Yep. Okay. Now, the next one I have is by Pam, and this is called The Longing of Distrix. Okay, my balls are going out on me. Okay, Pam, whenever you're ready, honey.
All right. Beneath the glow of the moon and in the black veil of midnight, I awaken. I am Daya Gwayar, the Styrx. I can appear as a bird or a woman, but no matter my form, I am always hungry for the blood of innocence. I need the fluid of life, which flows through the veins of the young. Oh, how I wish I could rid myself of this vile appetite. But alas, I am the product of generations of bloodlust. Those born before me were cursed and overcame with madness, never a conscious thought given to their demonic deeds. Yet here I am, through a cruel twist of fate and the dark humor of the gods, with every howl and cry of my hideous song. I am fully rational, fully aware. I am constantly at battle with the monstrous cravings within myself. I wish I could say I am always victorious, but that would be a lie. Through magic, I am able to disguise myself and walk among mortals, but always I am aware that I never fit in, for I am neither human or deity, but a wretched, hungry creature from the dark realm between the two worlds. Oh, how I wish I could know love and marriage. I wish I could know the blessings of a family, but wishes are for fools, and never can such fantasies come to light as long as the blood calls to me. I am Daya Gwayar, the bringer of death, the raptor of bloodshed. I want to have a soul, to be something wholesome and beautiful, but alas, I cannot. So guard your children with diligence, lest they know the piercing of my beak. End poem.
Wow. Excellent piece, Pam. Naomi, would you like to start us off?
Yeah, I love that, like the haunting darkness of this piece all throughout. And, you know, the amazing cleverness with what you wrote it, Pam. And, you know, there's even, you know, you feel the emotion, the longing of this creature to be, you know, to have a soul, to be human, to have so much more than just her lust for blood, to be, you know, to have a family, to have love, I think, you know. And, you know, but, you know, she wishes are for fools. And never can such fantasy come to light as long as the blood calls to me. And, you know, that puts a damper on her wishes. But, you know, you know, a wonderful, wonderful rite of a dark rite. wonderfully written, and I enjoyed it very, very much, Pam. So thank you so, so much.
Thank you.
Great. And Laurent, how about you?
I sometimes I despair of finding a new way to phrase Pam for her poetry. I don't think I've ever read anything except for perhaps one prose story, which I kind of questioned. I don't think I've ever read anything by yours that wasn't good. But I use hyperbole. Too often we ignore good. Good has many levels. It satisfies the inner hunger that we have for excellence, because good is also excellent. You manage to take words that are not complicated, they're not multisyllabic, they're not arcane words that you have to look up and it just, stops the poem dead. But you use words kind of like a velvet hammer. They're innocent words, but you put them together in a combination that literally there are moments in this poem where it sends a chill right up my spine. The second stanza: no matter my form, I am always hungry for the blood of innocence. I need the fluid of life which flows through the veins of the young. When you read the word "the young," is the point where they all Jesus. She even does kids. And further on in the poem, you speak about guard your children with diligence, lest they know the piercing of my beak. Wow, that was such a powerful way to end it. But to me, it's the development of the character of the Dayaguar that is so successfully done. You voice the inner monologue that she has, her regret, the wishes. Oh, how I wish I could rid myself of this vile appetite. But alas, I am the product of generations of bloodlust. Those born before me were cursed, overcome with madness. Never a conscious thought given to their demonic deeds, yet she has given thought to the demonic deeds. She is different, perhaps. Yet here I am through a cruel twist of fate and the dark humor of the gods. With every howl and cry of my hideous song, she acknowledges who she is. I am fully rational, fully aware. Rational means she's like us. She has the same feelings that almost any human being might have. Yet she's at battle with monstrous cravings. Those monstrous cravings are the same cravings that a murderer might have. Someone who craves bloodlust differently, in a more human way, as opposed to here, where we have a deity who she says, I am not a human or deity, but I tell you what, she's immortal. And being immortal, she's never going to have anyone live to her age. Everyone she ever knew or ever will know will die, and she will continue living, abandoned by everything that ever lived. And surely that has to call her the way she feels. I'm almost talking about this character as if she was real. That's how well-developed this character is. And bravo, Pam. Damn good poem.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Well, Pam, I have to, agree with everyone. It was a fabulous piece, and I know it didn't just pop into your head. I know you did a little research on this, and I think that you really lent personality to the image and the prompt, and really made it into what it was. And it was a wonderful piece, as always, very well expressed and put together. So that's excellent. And I did leave you a written comment. But I have one more piece I want to get up for tonight. And, Laurent, I'm going to ask you to read this. It's called The Minotaur by Poetic Picasso.
All right. Okay. Minotaur.
seeks him amidst the ancient labyrinth of the abounding souls, knowing that behind the corridors of columns he roams as a vague shadow. Within the shade of darkness he lurks, with glowing red eyes, the presage of an eerie silence of death prevails over the entrance of doom. He is enthralled by the spell of his beastly seduction. His roars are like the evoked echoes of the raging thunder of the island of Crete. His breath is the haunting mist of legendary myths. The piercing rays of moonlight reflects the shattered bones thus scattered as a token of his wrath. Her long locks of hair are brushed by the ominous winds. Her alabaster dress is ruffled by whispers of the utterance of her noble name. The adamantine walls shake the blind force of a maddening tremor. She sees him standing before her, half man and half bull, the Minotaur. And so.
Great. Great reading, Laura. Pam, you want to start us off?
Oh, this is wonderful storytelling. I love the dark sensuality in this and how he uses the Minotaur and the woman in the picture to create a story of that has the vibes of Beauty and the Beast with such a wonderful dark sensuality, amazing imagery and metaphors. And I like how this speaks on the seduction that calls to the beastly nature, and it's beautifully written all the way through. But I especially like the second stanza, which starts with, she is enthralled by the spell of his beastly seduction. His roars are like the evoked echoes of the raging thunder of the island of Crete. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Mm-hmm. Great job. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, I enjoyed reading it. I thought it was skillfully done, shorter than a lot of Frank's poems, but written with that same elegance of line and really well done images that evoke images that evoke the emotions in us. Make this it's a classic poem, but it does have a little bit of the modern in it. There are lines in here like, his breath is the haunting mist of legendary myths. The piercing rays of moonlight reflects the shattered bones thus scattered, the token of his wrath. And it is simply elegant descriptive writing. Perhaps not the most complicated of pieces, yet it has a power about it because it really gives us the image very successfully of that half man, half bull, the Minotaur.
Nice comment, Laurent. Yeah, I think that this was a story really well told. If my memory serves me, you know, it's a familiar story. But Frank really did write it well. I liked the shorter lines, and it wasn't real dense and full of all this stuff. You know, it wasn't light, but it was lighter and easier to absorb, I guess, is a good way for me to put it. I thought it was a great take on the prompt, and I enjoyed each of the stanzas very much. I did think that the opening stanzas did set the stage well. And I really enjoyed it, Frank, so I want to thank you for sharing with us tonight and appreciate your writing for the show and the contest. Appreciate it. And I hope everyone has a wonderful rest of the week because it is 12:01. Great. I have two poems to carry over to Friday night. And thank you, Laurent, for joining us and hanging out all night. Pam, thanks for running the phones. Naomi, thank you for hanging with us as long as you could. I hope everyone has a great rest of the night and a great rest of the week. And tomorrow night, Pam has The Art of Seduction. And what's following The Art of Seduction, Pam? Is it Parts In or Parts Ain't again?
I don't think so. I don't know for sure. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, no, it's not. She's on Friday again. We're back to Parts and Report saying has moved back to Friday this week. Very good, very good. And then Thursday we have Double Helix, followed by Break On Through. So I hope everyone has a great week. Enjoy. We'll all see you soon. And take care. Thank you, Pam.